I just come back from Hong Kong and Malaysia teaching meditation retreats and seminars and goodness knows what else. And you're not surprised to hear that the biggest problem people have in Hong Kong, in Malaysia, just like here in Australia, they can't stop thinking. So I gave some more advice on how to meditate without thinking about anything. The first of all is to get a hammer and bong yourself on the head, but that's, can't get away with that here in Australia because that's illegal. They'll stop you thinking, but you might be a bit unconscious at the same time. So there's much easier ways of stopping thinking. And I gave four ways, if I can remember them, of stopping thinking. First of all, take away the value of thinking. Because we assume that by thinking through our problems, we might be able to get an answer. And so we think, and use your experience, the wisdom based on experience. How many times have you thought, and really got a decent answer to the problems of your life, whether small or big? And you will find a lot of times you sort of get an answer, but it's not all that good. And most of the time the thinking leads to more questions and more work to be done. So when you take away the value of thoughts, that helps stop the thinking. I'd say it doesn't actually stop it, but it helps. It weakens its hold over you. So first of all, take away its value. And I remember that from a simile of the Buddha in the ancient sutras. And there the Buddha was very, very direct. He said to the monks, if you start thinking when you're meditating, it's just the same as a young man or a young woman going out at night. These days we say going out to Northbridge to a nightclub or to a party. And they're dressed in really nice clothes. And they find that somehow or other they've got a necklace of dead dog carcasses around their neck. And they would be disgusted. They would be ashamed going out to a nightclub with a necklace of dead dogs around your neck. And he said, that is just the same as the thoughts around our beautiful mind. Just like dead dog carcasses around your body, especially when it's stressed and ready to go out for the night. That was really quite a strong comment. But it's nice. What it really meant was, please take away the importance and the value of your thinking process, especially when you're meditating. If you really want to find wisdom, if you want to find the answer to the problems, you will find that when your mind gets stilled and peaceful, that then the answers come up by themselves, and they're the really good answers. Wisdom, insight, comes from stillness. I'm a calm mind, not a thinking mind. Now, one of the similes is the simile of the lake. If you go at night, especially around this time, to a lake, and at night time, you may be able to see the image, the reflection of the full moon, because it was full moon night yesterday. So you may be able to see the image of the full moon reflected in the lake, only when that lake has got no waves on it, only when it's still. Even the slightest ripples distort the reflection of the lake, which means that if you want to see a true reflection of the moon, you have to find the lake when it's perfectly still. There's no ripples on it. In exactly the same way, if you want to understand the truth, to find solutions to problems, you have to have that truth reflected in a still mind, without any thoughts. The thoughts of the waves, the ripples on the lake surface, it distorts the truth. It doesn't reflect the truth. So that little simile hopefully will reinforce the idea that if you want to find the answers to problems, not through thinking, please, just through silence, then the answers just, they pop up by themselves. So number one, take away the value from thinking. Number two is to notice that the thinking is nothing to do with you. It's not your business. You take away this personal ownership of thinking. Because it's whenever we own things, we just will not let them go. Even if they're unpleasant things, we think, well, they're my things, so you know, you keep your hands off them. So we won't let them go when we possess them with the sense of they're my thoughts. So the second way is to remember, these aren't my thoughts. What I teach people these days is when you have a thought, to interrupt the thought by saying, none of my business. Okay, that's another thought, but it's a thought-stopping thought, not a thought-generating thought. So to say, none of my business, none of my business, none of my business. So all these thoughts, it's just like somebody else's mobile phone going off. You know, you don't answer it, it's not your phone. You don't listen to the conversation, it's not your business. When somebody's talking and you're behind, you don't listen to them, that's rude. So remember, the thoughts in your mind, they're none of my business, they're not my thoughts. If they were my thoughts, I'd be very embarrassed because I have some stupid thoughts sometimes. That means if I had stupid thoughts and they're my thoughts, that means I'm stupid. So, remember, they are not my business. So you're weakening the hold on them already. And the third way of letting go of those thoughts is what we call like seeing the spaces between the thoughts. Once you've weakened the hold on the thoughts, you'll be able to notice that they are not continuous. Yeah, they might appear continuous, but if you look closely, when one thought finishes, before another thought begins, there is a space. Just like when one word of mine finishes, before the next one begins, there is a space. It's watching the space between the thoughts. Just like then you watch the space between my words, I hope. That's why I spoke in a weird way. So that you can see the spaces. Now what happens when you see the spaces between your thoughts? One thought finished, another one hasn't yet begun. You will notice there is a thing called the silent mind. You recognize it. And what happens when you recognize these places of silence, like when you recognize any place which is delightful, then you go back there again. Just like you might find a really nice restaurant or little cafe somewhere in Perth. And when you discover it for the first time and it serves really delicious food, really nice coffee, you discovered a new place. And of course, if it's really a great place, you'll go back there. And when you go back there many times, even the restaurant owner recognizes you and gives you your favorite table. Just like now. I don't go to restaurants very often, but I sure visit Perth Airport very often, and too many people know me in that airport now. They keep on asking me, Ajahn Brahm, hi again, where are you going this time? Because I'm always traveling. I just come back from Hong Kong and Malaysia. So, when you're familiar with a place and you recognize it, you tend to stay more time there. So once you recognize the space between your own thoughts, then you tend to hang out there longer and longer and longer. You tend to get familiar with silence. And that silent mind is like your favorite seat in the restaurant. So you hang out there for a long time. So at first you only notice small spaces between your thoughts. But once you've seen the crack between thinking, then that crack widens and the spaces become longer and longer and you find more and more silence in the mind. And lastly, the fourth way of stopping the thinking mind is do a mantra. And I was asking many people in this temple in Hong Kong, because they come from all the different traditions, what's your favorite mantra? And, you know, because they're exposed to all sorts of Buddhist traditions, they said to me the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. So I said, okay, great. If that's your mantra, then recite it to yourself. But, most importantly, put spaces between the words. Recite to yourself the Om and wait. Mani Padme Hum. When you start putting spaces between the words, you'll find that those spaces naturally get longer and longer and longer. Because what you're doing here, by reciting something simple to yourself, it does not need to be Om Mani Padme Hum. It can be any mantra you like. And it can be, I don't know what your favorite mantra is. Or it may be oh, may I be quiet. And so you start to say, oh, may I be quiet. So what are you doing there? Every syllable of your mantra, you pause at the end of the word or the thought, and you wait for a little while, deliberately at first, forcing the mind not to continue the next syllable until a second or two. And then you say the next syllable, then you pause, and then you say the next syllable, then you pause. Because then you're forcing yourself to be able to see these spaces between the words. And that actually works quite effectively. I had some good results teaching that over in Hong Kong. The Om Ma Ni Pa Mi Hum mantra with spaces in between. Because what people experience, it was something they knew, they were familiar with. It wasn't really that much effort to recite it to themselves silently. And first of all, it stopped all the thinking because, you know, you had to just put this mantra in. It blocked out all the other thinking. But at the same time, it wasn't just putting one thought in space of the original thought. It was putting a thought which would lead to silence because you put the spaces between the words. And as you put those spaces between the words, or even spaces between the syllables was better, it was naturally the spaces grew. Because the silence is something which the mind recognizes as valuable, a place of rest, like a beautiful holiday resort, a place where you really want to hang out. And once it recognizes the happiness, the peace, the joy of the silence, then you're home. The silence grows on you and grows on you and grows on you until it becomes almost like a second home for you. A place when you're not doing anything else, you can go to the silence and have a very, very peaceful time. And that's great for people. There's so many people who are insomniacs and or they're sort of, every now and again, something happens at home or happens at work, and you sort of worry about it so much, you go to bed and you just can't stop thinking about it and thinking you can't go to sleep and it tires you, you get grumpy and angry at your kids and all sorts of other stuff, which is so antisocial and unfair. And your kids never did anything, but sometimes whoever it is around you, you take it out on. Sometimes it's the poor dog you kick and the dog has done nothing, just except lie there and you kick it because you're angry. Now, by being able to stop those thinking through these methods, you find you can have much more peace in your life, much more happiness. You get better sleep at night and everything improves. And it's a great to be able to take your meditation in a deeper after the silence by watching something like the breath and allowing the breath to take you away from the body into the mind, as I've described many times. But the silence is established first. And basically, once you have a silent mind, then the meditation is so easy. You're going to get still. You're going to get peaceful. So it's like the platform. You dig a good garden, you put lots of fertilizer in it, then whatever you grow in there grows well. So once you have the ground of mindfulness and silence, you're away and have a great meditation. So that's the teaching today. Four ways of overcoming the thinking mind and having a bit of peace between your ears. Remember those four ways? Number one, taking away its importance. Number two, not owning your thoughts. They're not my business. Number three, was seeing the spaces between the thoughts. And number four was an extension of number three, doing a little mantra. But when you do the mantra, put spaces between the syllables. And then you'll be a person who has a silent meditation. Easy. Any questions? Good. Let's go forward. You can ask questions afterwards. So if you want to get yourselves comfortable as best you can in this hot weather. I was getting used to the heat before I went to Hong Kong, and that was really cold in Hong Kong. So I'm suffering because it's too hot. Sorry? Oh, that'd be lovely. You're such a kind person. May the merit of your action cooling down the monks cool your mind to Nibbana. That's actually one of the metaphors. They have all these descriptions of someone who's become enlightened. And one of them is called Siddhi Buddha, which means gone to coolness. So I'm now going to go to coolness, I hope. Oh, that's nice. Okay, so get yourself in a meditation posture, one that is good for you. And just to remind everybody, this is the ongoing meditation class for those who have meditated before. For those who are the introduction to meditation class, that's in the room on my right. So this is the ongoing class here. So if you're coming for the first or second, third time, that's the room on my right over there. This is the ongoing one. We're about to sit for 45 minutes. So sitting down, closing the eyes, and once the eyes are closed, your brain has more space to focus on the body. When you're seeing things, most of your brain is taken up with visual objects. Now all of that capacity is released to feel the body, which is why you can feel the body much more accurately and deeply once your eyes are closed. Now once your eyes are closed, you bring up the feelings in the body. You can do an exercise like, what is my most prominent feeling? What sensation stands out above all others? That's usually a problem, or at least a problem in the making. So once you notice the most prominent feeling, please do something about it. Adjust the body, scratch, cough, whatever. Because once we have awareness, the next thing we establish is kindness. Being kind to our body. To relax it, free it, loosen it. Because any tightness or tension now might seem insignificant to you, but later on that will turn to an ache or a pain which is going to disturb you greatly. The longer the time you intend to sit meditation, the more careful you have to be at the beginning. Stay with the body. Don't run too fast into the deeper meditations. Preparation is the key to success in all fields, including meditation. And if you find you have a tummy ache or a gut ache or an ache in your back or anywhere which you can't get to by scratching, which you can't alleviate through moving, then relax it through kindness. Send your attention to the middle of it as if the seat of your awareness is right in the middle of that pain. You put your mind in its center. And then you spread this beautiful compassion, kindness, from within. Compassion is a great healing force. And at the very least, it relaxes. Because it takes away the fear which causes the body to become tense. So we use your compassion and kindness to take away the fear which keeps the tension tight in the body, causing it to ache and be sick. So we learn how to relax. Relax not just the whole body, but the inner parts of our body. To relax your digestive system. To relax the lungs, to relax every part of you. the body's relaxed, come into the moment. No past, no future, just now. The past are dead moments which cannot be changed. Trying to work out their meaning or solve their problems is not the job of meditation. Meditation is to let go of the past. It's also to let go of the future through realizing. Now is the place your future is being made. By focusing and caring and cherishing the now, you are cherishing the place where your future health, happiness, and prosperity is being generated. Care for the present, and you do the best for your future. So bring your attention into the now. And be kind to this present moment. Add compassion to mindfulness.
It's getting very close to the end of the meditation now. Time just to pause and ask yourself how you feel. How much peace, freedom, how much stillness you have in your mind. And see if you can compare that to your memory of when you began this meditation. So you can see your progress and see what's happened. And especially to see whether you've been able to calm your thinking mind by following those four practices of getting beyond thinking. And enjoy the peacefulness just for a few more moments. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. So please listen to every sound from the gong. When the last ringing of the gong vanishes, come out from your meditation. So that's a nice 45-minute meditation. Just learning how just to relax the body, relax the mind, and get a state of peace and stillness. And especially by learning how to take away the value from thinking, realize it's none of my business, see the spaces between the thoughts, or even do the mantra with spaces in between. Until as a human being you can find those moments of silence. This is always something you can do at any time of your day. Driving, working, there are many opportunities to be silent and listen and feel the world rather than always thinking about it. And if you do that you'll be a much more peaceful person. You'll be able to just go for a walk on the beach or in the hills or just be in your garden and be able to see and listen rather than always being in your head thinking and worrying and planning and remembering. It has huge benefits therapeutically in your life. But best of all, it means that when you come and meditate, you find that the thinking mind is not such a problem anymore. So when we go to the next stages, which I never focused on because I just wanted to focus on one thing today, when you go into watching the breathing and allowing the breath to become delightful and seeing the whole breath and body disappear and getting into these beautiful lights called nimittas, it means that there's not such an obstacle anymore, this thinking, which always tends to interrupt the process of meditation. Remember, we're supposed to be silent inside it. In all cultures and all traditions, the silent mind, the silent sage, is something which all traditions, all religions regard as something which is very holy and spiritual. And if there's nothing else which you learn from your practice of meditation, just learning how to get some silence inside will be a great advancement in your spiritual career, especially as a meditator. Once you have silence, the rest is pretty easy. It's just a matter of waiting, being patient, and just letting things evolve. Just like, you know, the old simile of growing a tree. Now, once there's a good seed in there and it's a good ground, the tree grows by itself. So once you have a little bit of mindfulness, compassion and silence, the meditation just takes off and just happens. And most people who've experienced deep meditations, they say just that, they're just sitting there and just the whole thing happened, it just evolved. I was mentioning last night, just talking with a professor of art from Hong Kong a few days ago, and she was just telling me that's the way she performs to such a high standard. She just disappears. And she was asking me whether what was going on, whether I understood what was happening to her when she drew or painted these, you know, very, very impressive works of art. I said, yeah, exactly what happens. You're silent. You have no commentary on what you're painting or drawing. And in that silence, you get creativity. It just happens. You don't do anything. And that's precisely what happens in meditation. You're just silent. You don't do anything. It just happens. But when you have a commentary, you usually mess it up. You don't need a commentary. Just be silent. Be peaceful. And then life flows much better. So, has anyone got any comments or questions about today's meditation? Yeah, thank you. Sure, indeed, the two, your work, your life, meditation, they all support one another. They're all in this dynamic relationship with one another. And it's just true, I've given so many talks that sometimes I just give the talk and I don't really realize what's going on when I give a talk. I think it was just about a month ago, just because I was looking and checking, I realized when I give a talk, I'm not thinking. I'm not thinking what I'm going to say. I just go silent and just let the words come out. So even when I give talks, there's no prompting at all. I'm not thinking, what am I going to say next, what I should be saying. It's just you allow it to flow from silence. And that's especially the case when I teach the monks, because the monks, they know so much. What was it? Just recently I was giving a meditation retreat in Sri Lanka. And there was people on the retreat who were professors of Pali, professors of Buddhism. They knew more suttas and Pali than I'd ever know in my whole life. And so that there, you know, you had to be on the job. Because these professors, if I said something wrong, they'd know exactly where I was wrong. And they could quote chapter and verse. That's not what the Buddha said. That's not... So that was brilliant, because I knew I had to be on my sharp. So I just was really silent and just let it all flow and did a really good job. So that's actually how we work. When you're silent, when you think about it, that's when you make mistakes. As I said last night, you know, when you're thinking about what you should do when you're driving, you know, you keep making mistakes. When it comes naturally, you just respond because you've done it for so long. When you're riding a bike, you're worried about falling off and then you fall off, you're thinking too much. So it's the same when anybody's got air. You may have to do a presentation at work, and it's only about in front of 10 or 15 people and you get nervous. Oh, come on, just enjoy yourselves and just don't think about it. It's very easy to do. That old story I told it in Hong Kong, of where we had to move all that earth, you know, for 9 days when Ajahn Chah was building a temple. I got really fed up. 3 days we moved it. And then they said it was in the wrong place, so we move it back again, and then we have to move it again. And that was on the seventh day, you know, that's when I lost my faith. And said, look, you guys, you've seen the monks. If you want the earth somewhere, you should figure it out first of all, instead of telling us to move it this way and that way and then move it again. And you don't do the moving, you just decide we've got it in the wrong place. Thank you very much. You know what managers are like. And so that was when that person came up to me, a monk. They knew I was upset. They knew I was really angry. And they came up and said, you know, Brahm, pushing wheelbarrows is easy. Thinking about it is a hard part. And you know, there's times like that. They just, someone gives you a piece of advice and it goes right in. And you understand. And I really thank that monk. I forget who he was. And when you got this hard job to do, you shouldn't be doing it. Somebody else's job. I never became a monk to be a builder's labourer. So if you start thinking about it, I shouldn't be doing this. Why should I do this? It's wrong to do this. It makes it really hard. So when you sort of start thinking about it and just do it, the wheelbarrows became much lighter and had really good fun then. And that was the first time amongst many I realized thinking about it is a hard part. Doing it is really easy. Anything you have to do in life, speaking in public, going to the dentist, having chemotherapy, even the biggest acts of your last part of your repertoire, dying. Dying is easy. Thinking about it, that's the hard part. That's why when you're silent, everything gets easier, no? Just one more. Oh yeah, that makes life much easier. And you perform to much a higher level. Whatever you're doing, writing, creating, painting, especially in the arts, in sports, you know that many high-profile sports people, they get into what they call the zone. They practice, but when they're in the final, they just forget about everything they've ever been taught. They just let it flow. And when they get nervous and they sort of try and do something, that's when they start to fail and they lose their game. Whether it's in tennis, whether it's in football, whether it's anything else, doing it, it's not just easier, but you perform much better. Think about it, you mess up. That's right, you see, he's a psychologist, so that's his profession. And so, you know, the Buddha would have, if he was up here, he would say to you, Chris, I told you so. So these psychologists are just telling us what we already know. Okay, any other questions for anyone? Okay, so let's split. And time to go. So we now pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, those who wish to, and then we can go and have a cup of tea or a cold drink or whatever you wish to have.